all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. He is live. He is alive. His voice is very slowly returning, and it's a Thursday morning here, live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network 606 on this Thursday, March 7th. Nice to have you here. So I've got a question for you. What's your favorite cereal? This is National Cereal Day. You'll hear us talk about that with the all the calendar and historical events coming up later this hour. But I figured since this is National Cereal Day, it's such an easy way to, just with a couple of words, say where you stand on breakfast. And in doing so, you can send us a little text message and let us know. You can call, too. We're always happy to take your calls. 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC or 855-752-4842. And just send us a quick little text message. You know, this is Paul in Hayward and Fruit Loops, whatever the case may be. We'd love to see what cereal are you willing to make a stand on. So Mr. Honey Bunches of Oats here is going to shut up long enough to bring in Greg Bach, who is here to represent the great cereal of...
I'm so sorry to say this, but I love Special K.
Do you really?
There's nothing. I do love a good Cinnamon Life. Cinnamon Life is wonderful as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I would, but I'd probably do Special K. Now it makes me sound bland and boring, but I just like a good cornflake.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Special K, is that cornflakes or is that more like a... almost like a puffed rice. There's something in the flakes.
No, Special K is just cornflakes with a different name.
Okay.
We have cornflakes. What do you want to call this? I don't know. It's nothing special.
Special K. You know?
Caitlin.
All right. That's okay. Maybe there's somebody there that's willing to send a text message in saying, Greg, you go. That's right. I'm standing with you over here.
You live your cereal life.
Yes, you live your best cereal life you can. So you give us a text or a phone call on this National Cereal Day, 855-75-CIVIC. Mr. Bach, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, you know. Mm-hmm. I had a late night last night, had to work at the club late, so I'm a little tired, but, you know, still here to bring the fun. You bring the news, I bring the goofy, as I was called once by a non-fan. A buffoon clown.
Aw, no.
No. I throw that in the bath. I let it marinate the water and I get in. Buffoon clown. Buffoon clown Bach was buffoon the official clown. Title.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, you go with that.
Heck yeah.
I wanted to know though, about a social media post of yours, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was a very short caption, something like comedy is tragedy, and there were two different photos of you looking like you were struggling at the microphone, which, you know, a photograph just captures just a quick moment, and if your eyes are closed the right way, you know, you look anguished rather than just closing your eyes or blinking.
Yeah.
But you looked rather tortured in these photos. I thought they were very artsy.
Well, they were taken by very talented photographers. Adam Moit Ossers took the first one where I look like I'm like fiercely disappointed that I didn't have a V8. And then the other one was taken recently at a show where I probably was looking at my feet saying to myself, what are you saying next?
Don't you? Oh God, you must do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what's next? What's next?
I mean, honestly, the black and white one, that was a fantastic show. I had a really great set. I had a really fun time. The audience was great. So it's just, people just seem to capture me in my most tortured on stage.
All right. First text of the day comes from Bruce in Eau Claire. I'm with Greg. Special K all the way.
Boom, Bruce.
There we go.
That's my fam right there. Bruce, baby.
Temperatures around Wisconsin are looking like this morning. It is 36 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. Oh, look at this. Paul from Cadott backing you up. Cinnamon Life is next. I got somewhere out there is another Honey Bunches of Oats, you know, boring person like me, but we'll see. 36 here in Chippewa. And then as far as the rest of the civic media sites across Wisconsin, let's go left to right, top to bottom. Hayward, you're at 37. Park Falls, 33. Wausau, 33. Green Bay's at 31. La Crosse, you're at 40. Wisconsin Rapids, 32. Oshkosh, 37. Madison, 34. Waukesha is at 32 degrees right now. We get forecast updates throughout the day here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And then Brittany Merlot will join us again next week to bring us a more statewide look at your weather forecast. All right. Coming up on the program today, a bridge is actually more than just a bridge, depending on where it is. And the State of the Union address is more than just a speech. And you can expect President Biden later this evening to tell stories about how things like a bridge project can change lives. After all, they've already produced a very nice 5-minute video on a bridge in Wisconsin, the Blotnick Bridge. And they talk all about Superior in this video, narrated by Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. And so we're actually going to play that back, you know, the audio portion of it, so that you get a sense for what Buttigieg calls a season for storytelling. And that's what, you know, good campaigns should be doing, especially if you're an incumbent running for re-election, is you should be telling the story of what you did, what you accomplished, and you should tell it in personal terms. And so when you hear how they're telling the story of the Blotnick Bridge project in Superior, you're going to get a real sense of the pro-growth, pro-jobs story of accomplishments to contrast to Donald Trump's carnage in America. America is a hellhole. You know, America is the worst. And, you know, which one do you really want to align yourself with when you hear these two very different visions of America? In our second hour, Kristen Lyerly will be with us with what she calls a dude edition of Women Win Wisconsin, which is where basically she's just making an exception, and has Jamie Wall coming in, who is newly announced for a state Senate district in Northeast Wisconsin. Because, you know, all these new legislative districts, they have opened up many options for people who are deciding whether to run for election, whether to run for re-election, whether to retire, whether to move to be in a different district. And so we'll check out the landscape of that one district as a way of telling that story. Facebook comment from Michael Seal telling us, Honey Nut Cheerios. We get one vote there. I feel like we need a scoreboard someplace. This could get complicated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, back in my day, the cereal aisle had Corn Flakes, Captain Crunch, Raisin Bran, and what? Toast. not much more than that. So many, many more. I mean, just last week visiting the grandkids, you know, the ones that have me sounding like this right now, instead of Trix and Cinnamon Toast Crunch and some other version, they were Minnie's version of them. So imagine Trix, but in like BB size pellets, and BB size pellets of like Cinnamon Toast Crunch. For little kids, great. You know, they kind of melt in your mouth or whatever. But I mean, there's just so many variations now. And then there's me. This morning, one egg, one sausage patty. That's it. That's all I need. Very simple person with cholesterol that should be better managed, arguably, but it works for me.
Yeah. Hey, whatever. It's fuel. It's not, you know, you don't need to be making a Paul Bunyan breakfast every morning.
No, I mean, I would like to.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong, but since I don't burn off as many calories as a lumberjack, you know what else I did yesterday and had for breakfast today? I made chocolate chip cookies for the first time in forever. Usually it's my wife gets the idea of, hey, we should have cookies, and she makes some cookies, and she basically uses the recipe on the, you know, the Tall House on the bag, the back of the bag of Nestle chips, chocolate chips. And I use kind of a variation of the Mrs. Fields cookie recipe.
Oh.
And as I put them, just before I put them in the oven, I realized I made a mistake.
What'd you do?
It turned out to be an okay mistake, actually maybe a happy mistake. I looked and saw that I had grabbed the wrong flower. There's the usual all-purpose flour. Mm-hmm. And then there's a flour there specifically for bread baking and other things. And so it's called bread flour. I'm like, I don't even know when we used this last. how is this going to be different? Well, the difference was instead of taking 6 minutes to bake like the recipe said, they took like 12 yeah. plus to bake. But I'm not going to say they came out cakey, but they came out really nice and like fuller or richer or something. I was really happy with them. So
is this a new Pat Kreitlow recipe?
I don't know. I don't know. We will see.
All right.
I will say, again, the guy that really should not be making and consuming cookies for breakfast did a good job. So it's done nothing to discourage me from having cookies for breakfast again in the future.
All with a happy accident.
That's right. The happy accident. Let's check sports at 6:17. Last Sunday, you wouldn't know this. I certainly didn't know it. But last Sunday, the Golden State Warriors were just pummeled by the Boston Celtics. Boston beat them by 52 points. You think they weren't a little motivated last night when the Milwaukee Bucks came to town? Steph Curry had 29 points, and Golden State beat the Bucks 125-90. For the Bucks, that was only their first loss since the All-Star break. Giannis had 23 points. He was questionable coming into the game after missing Monday night because of his left Achilles. The Bucks were outscored in the fourth quarter, 32-9. An output that low hasn't been seen in years. The Bucks continue their four-game California trip with a game against the Lakers in LA tomorrow night. The eighth-ranked Marquette men's basketball team lost at home last night to second-ranked UConn, 74-67. They next play at Xavier on Saturday. The Badger men's basketball team will host Rutgers tonight. Some Civic Media stations will have the Badger basketball game. Others will have coverage of the State of the Union address. Let's see, we will have Maggie Dawn and Stuart J. Waddles hosting our coverage of the State of the Union address a little later this evening. We're going to talk next about the State of the Union speech and, again, an ongoing Wisconsin connection, a true sign of the investments being made in infrastructure, overdue investments in Wisconsin infrastructure by the Biden administration. But wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Unmute yourself.
Okay, if you insist. You know, the Biden administration knows that far too few people understand or appreciate how much they got done a couple of years back, things that are going to pay dividends for a generation. The president is looking to change that, starting with tonight's State of the Union address. The Biden campaign is looking to change that by engaging in some locally based human-centered storytelling. In fact, you're about to hear Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg say as much. He's going to say, this is a season for storytelling. And so the U.S. Department of Transportation has put together a series of about 5-minute videos to show how boring things like presidential speeches and budgets are actually very important. In this first edition, they travel to Superior to connect a dry speech and a big old bridge with the lifeblood of an entire community. You'll hear Secretary Buttigieg, as well as Superior Mayor Jim Payne, Duluth Mayor Roger Reinert, a young iron worker named Cammy, and Tim Nelson, the founder of Earth Rider Brewing. When Biden came to Superior recently, he spoke at the brewery in part because Nelson sent a letter of support for the bipartisan infrastructure law application that led to the Biden administration pledging $1 billion to replace the aging Blotnick Bridge that connects Superior to Duluth. So let's give a little listen to that video.
Where Duluth and Superior meet represents a key transportation hub in the Great Lakes region where all of the important pieces come together. We're talking about trains, trucks, We're talking about people's commutes, and we're talking about the ships and barges that get things to where they need to be. All of that comes together in this very specific place.
The Blatnik Bridge, it's the icon and the symbol of both cities. This was a soaring piece of infrastructure that rose well above even the very tallest buildings in Duluth and Superior. I mean, 10,000 jobs rely on this bridge.
Carries 33,000 cars a day, $4 billion of commerce annually.
But it is at the end of its life. This is not a hope it doesn't close situation. It will close in 2030.
For this bridge to close would be an unbelievably disruptive event for the entire region, not just in some abstract technical sense, but in people's everyday lives.
So originally I was playing volleyball at the university here in town, and then I transferred to a tech school for welding my senior year. I was still playing some volleyball co-ed, and I ended up playing with the apprentice coordinator for the Ironworkers Local 512. And he told me about all the great things that Ironworkers do and kind of just talked it up. Basically sold from there on out.
Starting out right away, like outside of college, was awesome because it was already good wages and benefits starting off. You're constantly learning something every single day. It's rewarding for sure. So the Blatnik Bridge is definitely a big deal in this area. The bridge supports trades workers, a lot of families, and is really important to the people who live here.
Yeah, I did write a letter to people to judge just expressed our support of a project that helps us connect our communities. I come across the bridge on a daily basis. I live in Duluth, I work in Superior, as do many of my coworkers and suppliers. It's just super important for us as a community to have that bridge operable and safe for everyone.
Dear Secretary Buttigieg, the initiatives within this grant application provides Northern Minnesota and Wisconsin a sense of productivity, culture, and connection. Thank you for your consideration for approval of this application. Sincerely, Tim Nelson, founder, owner, manager, Earth Rider Brewing. This is why it matters. This is why we're in this.
Please join me in welcoming the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Folks, I'm here today to talk about something that doesn't get enough attention. The progress we're making to invest in America and American workers and American products. To invest in America, that's what we're doing.
Our customers are the railroad workers, the truckers, longshoremen in our area. We wouldn't be here without it. And I don't mean we, I mean we as a bigger picture thing. We would not be here if we didn't have the infrastructure in order to do our jobs on a daily basis.
Knowing that I could be working on that bridge and that it's gonna last another 60 plus years maybe is super cool.
Yeah, so well, this is the tech school right here. It was WITC when I went, but they just changed it to Northland College.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really big project, one of our biggest projects in the Twin Ports. It'll be really cool to be a part of that. I'm sure some guys will come out of retirement. It'll be kind of a big honor to work on that.
It has famously been said that there's no such thing as a Democratic road or a Republican bridge. What you have are good projects that deserve to get done.
For people that ask, why should I care about infrastructure? Those things that we don't think about, we don't see, matter when they don't exist. And when we deliver on them and deliver on them well, it builds trust. It builds trust not only in your community, but it builds trust between citizens and their government.
we can't have the greatest country in the world if we don't invest in the things that bring this country together, because it's the work we do together that makes us the greatest country in the world.
And that again was a video put together by the Biden administration, in part for the State of the Union address, in part for the storytelling that the administration is going to be doing throughout the rest of this year. And I really liked the words of the mayor of Duluth there near the end. How can you be the greatest country in the world if at times you can't come together? And a bridge like that between Superior and Duluth really exemplifies that, how you're going to have, as Cammie said, you're going to have some of older workers who are coming out of, you know, retirement. That's how you would do that. You hear Republicans talking all the time about, you know, well, we need to entice more people to come out of retirement. That's how we address the labor shortage. Well, so then they want to what? Cut benefits or do something to force people out of the home? No, you make investments like this where workers, you know, maybe retired iron workers say, yeah, I would like to be out there. I'd like to be at the forefront of building this landmark in the community. So it's not the hour-long speech. It's also not the 30-second political ad, you know, the hits, the political hit jobs that are done. Frankly, if any campaign, the Biden campaign or others, could get more of these types of videos, these types of stories, personal and local stories out there to folks, maybe through their social media feeds or whatever the case may be, I think we'd all be so much better served. Coming up in just a moment here, Joe Zepecki is going to join me. We recorded something late yesterday when my voice was still even worse than it is right now. So we're going to get through that together. Kristen Lyerly's here not too far away as well on Up North News Radio for this Thursday morning on the Civic Media Radio Network. Take me away. Turn things over to the dulcet tones of Joe Zepecki as much as possible during our regular Thursday morning visit. Joe, how are you?
Better than you, clearly. I'm so sorry you're not feeling well.
Well, I'm feeling much better. The voice just hasn't decided to come back yet. It does. You need to have something now and then to look, you know, to rewind and play back and go, oh yeah, that you were definitely under the weather for a couple of days there, weren't you?
Yeah, I'll say.
So, oh well, so it goes. But we still had news, and you're still here to tell us all about it. Especially since, you know, we only learned on Monday some more details about the fake elector scheme, and then I was out on Tuesday, so we didn't really get a chance to talk about it. So, why don't you walk folks through what we learned, why we learned, what was the new development involving these two Trump attorneys? Why did we suddenly get to see a video and all these new documents? And then we'll get into your own impressions of them, but set it up for folks as far as what we learned this week.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, the fake electors themselves settled a civil suit brought by Law Forward, great organization, seeking accountability through the law and legal mechanisms. And two attorneys, Troupas and Cheesebro, who have been long understood to be all wrapped up in the treasonous plot to overturn the 2020 election, reached a separate settlement with Law Forward, acknowledging their role and complicity in the fake electors scheme here in Wisconsin. So this is a settlement that includes a pledge that they will never be involved with anything like this ever again. There was a monetary settlement that was not disclosed. And as part of the settlement, they had to turn over scores and scores, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands of pages of communications about the plot, about the conspiracy behind the scenes. And man, is there a lot there. We are talking about from as early as November 11th, which was, I think, 3 days after the 2020 election was called formally, right through January 5th and 6th, and the handoff or attempted handoff of the fake elector certificate from Wisconsin. So there was a lot of new information that I learned, and I think the public is learning by virtue of this settlement by Troupas and Cheeseborough.
And Ron Johnson's name made an appearance in there just to, oh, you look like you're ready to go on this.
Boy, did he. So to refresh everyone's memory, in the January 6th committee hearings, it was disclosed for the first time that Senator Ron Johnson was the cutout who they tried to have hand the fake elector certificates for Wisconsin and Michigan to Vice President Pence on January 6th. The plot here was that they would bring fake electors, and then Pence would say, I have competing slates of electors. I cannot determine which one of these to accept. Ultimately, they believed, you know, the conspirators, that they could successfully use that strategy in enough states to throw the election into the U.S. House of Representatives, where Republicans controlled a majority of state delegations. So we knew that Johnson had been approached, his staff was given the fake elector certificate, and they attempted to have Johnson hand that to Mike Pence on the morning of January 6th. Close followers of the news may recall that this led to a series of, shall we say, evolving answers from Ron Johnson about his involvement. First, he said it was staff to staff. He had no role in it. Then he said it was he was only involved for a matter of moments. And it turns out, Pat, I hope you're sitting down, he was lying about the extent of his involvement. Because in these documents, we learn a couple of things about Senator Johnson. The first is that he was editing or, you know, suggesting edits to testimony by Troupas in December. In December, so after the safe harbor date, December 8th, after the legal electors would have met in state capitals around the country on December 14th, on December 20th, Ron Johnson held a hearing in his Homeland Security Committee where he attempted to ask all these questions and shed all this light on everything that had been wrong about the 2020 election. And one of the witnesses he called was Troupas. Troupas submitted testimony to Senator Johnson ahead of time. And the senator himself, his personal email, not his staff, responded to Troupas's submission of that testimony by saying, is it okay if we make some edits? And Troupas, of course, welcomed that. There are also references to conversations with Senator Johnson. They read him in to this plan more than a month before January 6th. And so for Senator Johnson to not only, you know, use taxpayer dollars to hold a sham hearing where he was presumably writing the answers and the testimony for someone who has now been disbarred and found guilty and settled and charged, and it's just like one of the most clearly demonstrated traitors to this country and the rule of law. Johnson was in cahoots with him for weeks, and the senator owes the people of Wisconsin an explanation. I understand that the House of Representatives is controlled by Republicans right now, but there ought to be investigations into this. I mean, the gall of Senator Johnson to protest. Guys, there's no story here. There's no story here. He was swimming in it. He was up to his eyeballs in the soup of a conspiracy to stop the peaceful transfer of power from one president to the next. And he has brought as much shame to his role as a senator from Wisconsin as Joe McCarthy has. This is it. In chapter and verse, black and white on the pages, there's no getting around this unless he's got some other explanation. And thus far this week, I have not heard or seen one from Senator Johnson.
No, because the words on the paper, they don't lie. The Wisconsin Supreme Court a few days back said we're not going to hear a challenge to the state's congressional district maps. Strikes me as a little odd just because in a 50-50 state, Republicans will still have 3/4 of the congressional seats, but it's not the world's biggest surprise, is it?
No, I was not surprised. I mean, good for Mark Elias and the group that brought this. I think it was important to get it in front of a court to make a determination. I'm a little surprised. My understanding is that in the same way that the gerrymandered Republican maps were thrown out in part because they relied on a now proven to be illegal least change theory, the congressional lines were also drawn under that theory that has now been chucked by the court. So I'm a little surprised. I'm still not convinced this is the end of the conversation. There are other paths and other legal means. But I also am pretty confident that we now know what the congressional lines are going to be for this fall. And we know that there are a couple of opportunities for Democrats to pick up seats. Obviously, the 3rd Congressional District, represented by Derek Van Orden, who, of course, was on the Capitol lawn on January 6th, watching the insurrection, even if he was not himself violently assaulting police officers. That is a competitive district, and there's great candidates running to be the Democratic nominee. We know that Mike Gallagher, what passes for a rational, reasonable, sane Republican in today's MAGA-dominated Republican politics, has pretty shockingly announced he's retiring. So there will be an open seat in the 8th Congressional District. That's, of course, Green Bay and parts up in the northeast part of the state. And what it looks like is, if I had to bet today, Andre Jacques, a very, very conservative, 1,000,000% anti-choice extremist, is likely to be the Republican nominee. And that is the kind of nominee that, even in a pretty favorable for Republicans district, can have real problems in an election against a tough candidate who is willing to go to the mat for things like women's access to reproductive health care, for things like the ability for families to welcome kids through the miracle and science of IVF. And it would not surprise me at all if that 8th Congressional District shapes up to be a much more competitive race than it has in a lot of years past. And I've seen stranger things happen than a Democrat pulling an upset there.
It is interesting that you mention Andre Jacques rather than Roger Roth, who is a former Senate president. Is it just about name ID or experience or positions?
I think we all know, and we've seen across the country, where the Republican Party is, particularly where primary voting Republicans are these days. And the most MAGA, most far out Republicans are the ones who win nominations for things like President of the United States and for Congress and for Senate. And Andre Jacques is very much in that mold of a uber Trump, uber MAGA Republican. You know, Roger Roth has certainly had some success, but he's also struggled in some races and has fallen short a few times. So that's why my analysis of the horse race is Jacques. It's sort of Jacques to lose. But listen, there's a long way between now and August. Maybe Republicans will get religion when it comes to excising the MAGA-sized tumor in the body politic. But I don't think so.
No, and if they don't, it will be MAGAFest in Milwaukee for the Republican convention in mid-July. Now that Trump has essentially wrapped up the nomination, what do you think the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, what's it going to be like?
I mean, it's all about Donald Trump all the time. I mean, that, you know, typically party conventions are about charting a path for the future, showcasing rising stars in a political party, you know, highlighting governors and senators and mayors of the next generation. Well, if we know nothing else about Donald Trump, I think even Donald Trump's fiercest defenders would say it's all about him all the time. And so he has so completely taken over the Republican Party. It's just going to be 4 days of Trump, 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 Trump in a way that I think is going to be highly, highly problematic for not just the presidential election, if you're a Republican, but also for down ballot candidates. There's not going to be opportunities for new voices to emerge. There's going to be a display of the worst parts of our politics. And the worst parts of our politics right now are the MAGA agenda and the MAGA Republicans who do not believe in the Constitution, who do not believe in the peaceful transfer of power, and conspired to overturn a free, fair, safe, and secure one fairly and squarely by Joe Biden in 2020.
And yet there are Republicans who will try to be more moderate than they are, try to appear that way. Eric Hovde is certainly one. And yet the Daily Beast has an article this week pointing out Eric Hovde's record of financial support for people who are rather on the Republican extreme. So again, like I said earlier, you know, the ink on the paper doesn't lie, whether it's, you know, an email or a check that you write.
Nor does the fact that Eric Hovde is going to be standing on a stage alongside Marjorie Taylor Greene this weekend in Brown County, Wisconsin. You know, choose your friends wisely. And I understand politically, strategically, what Hovde is trying to do. He is trying to appear to be more reasonable and rational than some of that MAGA wing. But the reality is what the reality is, which is he has chosen his team. He is supporting Donald Trump for president, someone who conspired to overturn centuries of American tradition and the rule of law in this country, someone who is facing 91 federal indictments that are all felonies. And so Eric Hovde has made his choice. He is going to try strategically to get away from that. But I have a strong hunch that Democrats and Tammy Baldwin are not going to let him. And there's going to be down ballot ramifications for Republicans, not just here in Wisconsin, but across the country, as more comes to light about Donald Trump, as he is more in people's living rooms and in their lives now that he is the presumptive Republican nominee. I think a lot of people have been in denial about this, saying, no, it can't possibly be Trump again. Well, guess what, folks? Buckle up, strap in. He's the guy.
Yep. It is. This is where we will be. All right. Joseph Pecky, thank you so much. Appreciate your patience. And we'll have a much clearer interview next week.
Feel better.
We appreciate that from Joe very much. Hey, the new episode is out of the Vibes Only podcast with Brian Derrick and Glennis Mahar. That's from our parent company, Courier Newsroom. Their guest is Annie Wu, a digital strategist. They'll review some of the day's or the campaign's big stories. Go to couriernewsroom.com to get more or wherever you get your podcast. Today's history. This is Birthday Girl, Taylor Dane. Everybody's got to confess to loving a cheesy love song. This is mine. Taylor Dane is 62 years old today. And I would dare say that is my favorite love song of the 1980s. That's a 1988 hit by Taylor Dane. And so, Greg, I went and looked up, you know, greatest love songs of the 1980s.
Yeah.
They're not love songs. There's like Careless Whisper by Wham, which is like a cheating song. I Want to Know What Love Is, which is somebody who's not in love. They want to know what love is. ABBA, The Winner Takes It All, which is kind of more of a breakup song. So the 80s maybe didn't give us the best batch. Here's Whitney Houston, Saving All My Love for You. That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know. Lionel Richie's Hello.
The video makes it creepy.
Yes.
I mean, I always considered Dancing on the Ceiling a love song, but you know, what do I know?
Stevie Wonder, I Just Called to Say I Love You.
Yeah.
Just kind of bubblegummy, you know? So, no, I think this is... Look at this. Dr. Lyerly is belatedly joining us and is like scrubbing the lens of her camera before joining us.
I'm having a mic issue.
Oh, I see.
It looks like she's ready to go play World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
I had to go grab my kid's mic from their they're gamers.
Oh gosh, that's funny. pull that thing about a half inch away from your mouth just because it's popping a bit, and then tell us. I was just playing Taylor Dane. She's 62 today, and
her
"I'll Always Love You." I was saying this. I think probably my favorite love song of the 80s, but the 80s. We were looking at the list, not known for its love songs, not many of them. Endless Love by Lionel Richie, you know, and Diana Ross.
Careless
Remember
Whisper.
Remember that one? Did you just say Careless Whisper?
She did.
Yeah.
That was number one on this list I was looking at. It's not a love song. It's a cheating song.
But he's saying he'll never love again because he's messed up. He realizes what he has done.
It's done. Yeah.
But that's still...
the love is gone.
Save a prayer, Duran Duran.
See, I knew you were Duran Duran. It was never going to be far away. How are you
all
doing?
The Whitney Houston songs.
Okay. All the Whitney. I like that. So, you are back from a busy few days. You were in Washington, D.C. You were someplace else before that.
Mm-hmm. I was in Florida. I'm home for 24 hours, and then I'm headed off to northern Minnesota to work for 10 days.
My goodness. All right. Well,
so busy.
It's so good. I'm so lucky. Guess who I got to hang out with on Tuesday?
Who did you hang out with on Tuesday?
Senator Tammy Baldwin, the delightful, wonderful Senator Tammy Baldwin.
Nice.
That's okay. Cool.
We're going to be talking more about politics and news coming up in our next segment here. And then you've got Jamie Wall, a candidate for state Senate, coming up in our next hour as well. Let's see, getting back to today's history lesson, David Bowie released his 9th album on this day in 1975. Here's the title track. So yeah, the album was Young Americans. Mentioned Taylor Dane is 62. Actor Bryan Cranston is 68 today. Actor Jenna Fischer from The Office is 50. And actor Laura Prepon from That 70s Show is 44 years old today. Wow.
Do you want to know a fun story about this album?
What's that?
He wrote this album with a group called Gamble and Huff. They're producers in Philadelphia. And a young Luther Vandross is a backup singer on it. He wrote, recorded, and produced this whole record in 9 days, because really? That's what cocaine does.
Sadly, yes, it does. Let's see. Bloody Sunday was this day in 1965. A group of 600 civil rights marchers was brutally attacked by state and local police in Selma, Alabama, on this day in 65. Well, coincidentally, we've talked a couple of times in the past couple of weeks about We Are the World because of the documentary, but let's play a little bit of it again because it actually was released as a single on this day in 1985. Mostly just to get it stuck in your head again. There's been times I've either sent or wanted to send text to Dr. Lyerly going, it's still stuck in here.
Everyone be quiet. Just let Dan Aykroyd sing.
Now Sheila E., who doesn't, I never knew the word. It was just kind of mouthing along as we went along. On this day in 1987, Licensed to Ill by the Beastie Boys topped the album chart, becoming the first rap album to top the charts. Last week, we talked about the Simon & Garfunkel album Bridge Over Troubled Water going to number one. The song actually went to number one this day in 1970 for the first in of 10 weeks. One more clip to play. This is the anniversary of the 1875 birth of the French composer Maurice Ravel, perhaps best known for this little dance number.
Nothing but bangers on Up North News.
If you're within a certain age range, who are you thinking about right now?
Bo Derek
going down the beach, you know, with her braided hair and the beads and everything, and the movie 10. On either side of the age range, you're going, what? What's this? What?
Yeah, you two are old.
You've seen the pictures.
I have.
Haven't you?
Mm-mm. What pictures?
Of Bo Derek going down the beach.
Oh, yeah, the clip of Bo Derek running down the beach. Yeah, sure.
I haven't, no.
It's iconic.
It's memorable.
Okay.
Yes. I may have mentioned previously, this is National Cereal Day.
Yeah.
And so we've had a few people put in calls and comments. And so now, Dr. Lyerly, it's your turn. If you got to buy one box of cereal for the Lyerly kitchen, never mind what the boys want. What do you want?
I'm not really a cereal person. I'll always
Wait, this is just the
that...
segment's not working how I wanted to at all, but you go ahead and pretend
Can't
to play
spell
along.
Lyerly without lie.
Did you have to say that with a mouthful of coffee?
Sorry. Oopsie doodles.
Poor Pat, as if he wasn't having enough problems right now with his voice, and now his sinuses are full of coffee.
Now he's going to spit coffee all over his iMac.
I love Cinnamon Life.
Oh my gosh,
that would
gosh,
be my like
this.
Lifetime go-to.
It is such a Greg Bach day. Both of his choices have been affirmed.
So supported right now.
I love
yes,
you, Greg.
You should.
I love you too.
It's also National Flapjack Day, which is weird because, I mean, you're trying to encroach on cereal here. You got to pick one or the other. Mm-hmm. It is Plant Power Day, all about sustainable, healthy, vegan diets. And it's Hospitalist Day, which is a hospitalist is not a doctor. Well, no, a doctor is
a doctor.
We're going to explain the difference when I'm not short on time here, which might take place right after the news as Kristen Lyerly hangs around on this Thursday.